Welcome to Innovation Calling,
the podcast where we connect the creators for the next big thing. We're your hosts, Aaron Smith
and Sia Yasotornra.
Hey, it's Aaron of Innovation Calling, and I am so excited to present this episode to you because this is the first of our live event recordings where we're launching our Women in Tech Leadership series. This particular episode is with Dr. Brenda Connor of Ericsson, and we are doing this every single month. Our next event is April 9th. It'll be once again at the Network Bar, 5:30 p.m. We're going to have Crystal Christensen, who's a VP of Tech Support at SonicWall. And we sold out at our last event, so we want to make sure you're there. There's wine, there'll be appetizers, some incredible networking. As you can tell by this episode, we had a really fun time. So we hope to see you at the next one. You can head over to our website at innovationcalling.com to grab your tickets. Again, April 9th, and hopefully we'll see you there. In the meantime, please enjoy this episode with Dr. Connor. I love Eddie.
I'm done.
All right, welcome to another Welcome to another episode of Innovation Calling. I'm Aaron Greger.
And I'm Sia Yasotornra.
Yes. So this is our very first live podcast recording. We are here in front of an audience, so very excited to be able to do this. We'll be doing these on a monthly basis. And Sia, I'm going to let you introduce our guest today.
So I'm very honored to have Dr. Brenda Connor from Ericsson. She is the head of Smart Cities and Intelligent Transportation. She is joining us to give us a highlight of her illustrious career. We will be talking at length of it, so I don't want to go into it too much. But I will say one thing. 25 years. She just celebrated 25 years with Ericsson. So can we just give her welcome, Brenda, yes, for a big round of applause?
That's an achievement in and of itself. Like, that's impressive.
She does not have ADD is what it means to me. So Dr. Brenda, welcome.
Thank you, Sia. And thank you for the opportunity to be here and share my thoughts on women in technology. It's a really important field. I'm glad to be here. Thank you.
Excellent. Well, shall we start this roller coaster ride?
Absolutely. Go for it.
Okay. So 25 years. Clearly, you didn't come on as the head of any department or any division or any strategy thought leadership. So without going into too much detail, because we are only an hour long podcast, could you just help us understand, you know, where you came from? Because your degree was very much in the sciences, and where you are today is a little bit shift away. So how can you kind of step back in time a little bit too? Not when you were five, just maybe after college.
Well, that's not a question she told me she'd give me, so I got to start this podcast right.
Got to keep on our toes, guys.
So, let me start with a few things. So at 25 years, first off, 25 years with any company is really unheard of, particularly in the technology space. But I'm fortunate to work for a company that really has as its legacy innovations with impact. Innovations with impact. So if you want to talk about, 25 years, I mean, I think it's like great. I couldn't think of a better place to be. 84. First laptop. I worked at Data General at that time. First laptop came out. I have one. It's called the DG1 from Data General. It's actually in my closet at home, right? Because it's history. Let's see, some other milestones there. 96 was my first cell phone. Who doesn't have a cell phone in this room? Could you imagine growing up in a world where people did not have cell phones?
That's right? Amazing.
Right? In the early 2000s, smartphones started to rise, and you had M2M, right? I mean, this kind of, you think about the world, we look at technology today, but I've been a part of making those transitions happen, open ecosystems and app stores. Does anybody remember that in 2008, Apple launched their first iStore and how that changed who provided applications, right? I actually helped make that happen. Can you imagine innovations with impact, right? Where else would you work? So, I mean, and then now, today, with smart cities and intelligent transport systems, you know, think about with smart cities, and I see the colleague there had a podcast on that from before, smart cities. I mean, what is smart cities, after all? There isn't really a ubiquitous definition, but they tend to have common characteristics of measurable results for citizens, visitors, and commerce around the triple bottom line of societal, economic, and environmental impact. And the key to that is measurable results for citizens, visitors, and commerce. Like, making an impact. Who doesn't want to work on that? So I think it's been a great journey for me. But if I look back to where it started, I go through some of this journey because where I started, it was a very different world. It was very different. When I graduated from engineering school in 86, to date myself.
You didn't have to disclose that, by the way.
I worked for Data General, my first job. You probably don't even remember what Data General was, but they were a super mini computer company. You didn't have laptops. You had mainframes and mini computers. My first job, I was the second female engineer at this firm, and there were 400 male engineers. 400. Can you imagine? We talk about STEM now. That wasn't even a word that existed, right? So what's really interesting about that is that you learn some things. You learn that things. So I don't know if I should allow you to ask another question or carry on.
No, I'm so fascinated because I knew this would be a really good conversation because it's one of those things where I think you have those battle scars. I mean, you have war wounds that, quite frankly, if you're not in the industry or you're young or you don't care, you just don't know. I mean, it's just the idea that we're on a wireless microphone, again, is a testament to a lot of the enhancements in technology that, you know, wasn't around. And you take advantage of it. You don't know how much work has gone in to provide for this.
Yep. Well, and since this is a podcast on women in technology leadership, and one of my observations about women in technology leadership is that women hold themselves back.
I want to know how on that one.
Women hold themselves back. And we always like to talk about that a company doesn't encourage and all this business. And Ericsson is really progressive about encouraging women in leadership roles. But women hold themselves back. Okay, and I'll give you some examples. Men. If they see a job that they want, they go for it. A woman applies for jobs that she's overqualified for.
We were just having this conversation networking.
Right? Yep. So you think about that. Look at a job description. And I have four children. I'm blessed to have had four children that I raised, all of them in STEM. So yay for them.
Good job.
Yay. But if you think about it, the girls, and I've worked in different roles with youth leadership and such, and you're mentoring youth and such, they look at a job description and they read, the women read all 10 bullets and say, gee, I kind of don't meet this one, and they say, I can't apply. Men say, hey, I found one word that looks like me, and the resume goes.
Right.
And then, I mean, another example is that when your boss walks into your office and says, I need you to take on this challenge for the business, how do you respond?
Are you paying me or not? Tim?
Yeah.
Wait, how much bonus am I getting for this? No, but that is true. I mean, I think I've seen this where you do give extra responsibility to certain individuals and some of them will jump at it and own it. Some will ask you some details, but they will still deliver. And there's others that are like, unless you outline A, B, C, D, E for me, I don't know what I'm doing with this.
Well, and I actually had this conversation with somebody when Sheryl Sandberg wrote Lean In. That was the first time I ever realized people applied for jobs that they weren't 100% qualified. I swear to God, I read that. I'm like, oh, people apply for jobs that they only fit like 3/4 of this thing. I literally did not know that. And it was that book that opened my eyes to that. How sad is that? That was like 3 years ago. And I'm 41.
Yep. You didn't have to date yourself either.
That's okay.
Erin.
It's okay. I needed it to be more impactful, and I was willing to put my age out there for it.
That's right. I'm willing to.
I am not going to give my age out. But you're all in the hole I am, because I think I say it every day when my bones are creaking.
You know, I want to add on to what you just said, and that is that, you know, I'm really thankful that you introduced me as the head of smart cities and intelligent transport systems, but I actually have a new job now. I'm the director of agency IoT services for Ericsson North America. Oh. Right? Very cool, huh?
Ooh. Okay.
But you might say, what does that mean?
Thank you. Right? Hey, I'm interviewing. I'm just kidding. I'm just kidding, Brenda. Brenda, what does that mean?
You might say, what does that mean? Right, and I want to, because this is a talk on women in technology leadership, I thought it would be cool to talk about the process of staking your claim. The process of staking your claim. So in technology leadership, think about technology. Technology is just changing all the time. And if you're not refreshing your skills in technology every 2 years, you're pretty well going to be obsolete. Right?
Agreed.
Think about leadership now, because technology, leadership. Leadership is the art. It's the art of motivating a group of people to achieve a goal. It's an art, right? So technology, leadership. So in technology leadership, it's rare that you get someone giving you a detailed job description. Right?
Yeah.
I see it's my responsibility to take the direction that my leadership team has given me and then say, how do I take that direction and take the company's strategy within the context of that direction and provide value for my company's target customer?
Okay.
And that goal is what you use to stake your claim. And if you articulate that goal and it's clear how that goal takes you from the company strategy within the context of the broad direction you're supposed to be doing something towards a goal for customers, motivating people is less of a challenge.
Ah, so it's okay. Alignment. You're basically drawing it out.
You're helping to give a framework. And when you go to motivate people, right, especially technology leadership, you tend to have technical people in technology leadership. Motivating is one of them people words. Not black and white. You have to see gray, right? And one of the things I learned along the journey was that what motivates one person might not motivate another person. So you actually have to consider, what are the gaps in achieving that goal, that value? By the way, if there's no gap, you really don't need a technical leader, okay? It's already solved. So there's a gap, and so what will it take to close that gap? And what are the stakeholders that are both directly involved and implicitly on the fringes, and what motivates them?
So right? You're intriguing me on, okay, so I get very excited very easily. So it sounds very straightforward, but obviously execution is always that much harder. So could you give me an example then of something good that you have recalled in your time actually being able to execute upon the company strategy, your responsibilities, the customer's goals, requirements, et cetera? What was the most successful story that you can think of that just pops up in this context as you've defined it?
You know, the most successful accomplishment for my company I think I ever made in my career was when I took a decision at one point. Can you ask me this question about, have you ever taken a decision that was like a fork in the road, right? So I went from being a manager where I had 60 persons and P&L responsibility and all that business, right? And you know, women, I mean, and I digress for just a minute. What motivated me to make this change? If a man and a woman, and again, I was back in the, you know, I'm pretty old.
And so man and woman. You're pretty experienced.
I'm pretty experienced. A man and a woman back in the day could say exactly the same thing in exactly the same way. And the man was confident and the woman was aggressive.
Still that way.
Right?
I think a bunch of heads are like,
with that?
I think the heads are all like breaking.
And if
from
you're
whiplash.
Saying you feel that today, roll back the time, okay, to when I was young, right? And I said to myself, you know, if I am going to figure out how to be successful, I need to move from a role where I am a manager with this big line organization to take a job where the only way I will achieve business results is if I'm excellent at getting results through influence.
So how did you do that?
And that was very scary.
How'd you do it?
So I took a new role. I became the director of quality for Sony Ericsson. Now, if you remember Sony Ericsson, it was formed back in 2001, where Ericsson took two companies, one from Sony, one from Ericsson, that made cell phones. And we put them together in a company called Sony Ericsson. And guess what? Both companies were bleeding like mad. That's why they kind of stuck them as a joint venture over there. Maybe something happens or we'll sell them or something. I don't know. But that's, you know, that's what companies do. Right? They put together the stuff over there and hope they can do something with it. So I was the director of quality for Sony, a part of the joint venture team. And my job, and I was asked, this is one of these defining moments where someone said, I would like you to be the director of quality. Now, I had a line function, I made products, trunked radio system products. I mean, I was pretty comfortable in what I was doing. And I was asked to take that role. And I said, how hard can it be?
Wow.
And I did it, jumped in both feet. And, you know, so taking that new role, you had to be brave because you're leaving all, I mean, I was pretty secure. I owned this world over here, right? It's my own domain. And you're going doing something different where I had to be successful, there were a lot of things against me.
What were they?
Okay, so what were the things against me in that role? If you work in a global company, you have a lot of different, I mean, we had development units in Japan, Germany, Sweden, United States, and guess what? Everybody wants to do things their own way, right? So if you want to go from, so the result that I achieved was that with my role, I led the company and per annum over the almost 5 years I was there, we stopped the bleeding on $500 million a year on average. And it went from the red into the black. Does anybody remember when Sony Ericsson went into the black?
Raise your hand so you can date yourself too.
Date yourself too. That's right. So that was, you know, and how did we do that? Well, I said, hey, if I'm going to be the director of quality and I don't even know what that means, I had to do that same process. What does that mean? Here's the broad direction, our strategy, our target customers, what's the value prop, and then I put measurable results around it and accountability. Guess what? If you made your phones, you had to actually report on the quality of your phones, right? So what were the two measures that I focused on? Return rate and warranty repair cost. And now it's a long time ago and Sony Ericsson no longer exists, so I'll share some internal things. When the first smartphones, the return rate on that smartphone was 38%. They were never measuring it. Can you imagine a return rate on 38% on anything? And then ask yourself the average cost to repair. It's quite high. And then who can do math, right? If I get these many back and it costs me an average once, then you can say, geez, if I can reduce that, I can stop the bleeding.
Wow.
But can I ask, let me ask though, because I want to talk about, I mean, you're, this is going to come across horrible, and I don't mean it this way, but you were aggressive, which is great. And you were aggressive in the fact that somebody gave you some opportunity and you're like, you didn't shrink away, you took it. But it's obviously not a natural woman thing to do, quote unquote, right? So did you have mentorship? Did you have anyone along the way that you can remember specifically where it really kind of, was your mindset always that way? Like, I know I have to dig in and do this. Or were there people along your path that kind of maybe dropped some nuggets that helped somewhere along the way where you kind of where you were able to shift how you saw things and how you approach things, and you realized aggression wasn't a bad thing and it was a good thing to elevate your career.
Just for the record, I'm not aggressive.
But you are a, what's that thing, a shrinking violet, we can tell. That's why we invited you on our show.
But I will say, there's always somebody along the line that throws you a nugget. But do you recognize it?
Right.
Right? So the one who asked me to be the director of quality, that was throwing me a nugget, and I took it.
Right. They believed in you, right?
Right. Somebody saw something there, right? They gave you the opportunity. So, I mean, things have to line up. There is an opportunity running past you, and you're willing to jump in.
Right. Could you argue, though, that you set yourself up such that you would be that person that would be asked for that next jump or step in your career?
That would be giving me too much credit, because who's really thinking about that, right? But, you set yourself, you own your own destiny. So maybe, right? Like I said, I've been thoughtful about, it's lonely when you're a warrior woman back then. This idea that you had mentors was non-existent. We like to talk about that now, right? But mentors, there was no formal mentorship program for women.
Did you ever have males along the way that didn't, weren't like, well, you're a woman, so you can't? I mean, did you have men who ever helped out and didn't?
Well, I said that I credit Sandeep Chenakeshu with offering me the opportunity to be the director of quality and giving me that advice that you have to own your own destiny. Don't let other people tell you what your job is. That was his advice. So I'd say yes, but he wouldn't call himself a mentor, right? That wasn't like the way it was. But, mentorship, I really like to touch on mentorship because I think there's a lot of talk about mentorship now, but you have formal and informal mentors, right? So what is a mentor? Someone who's willing to take their time to give you advice or train you. And the key there is they're willing to take their time. So be respectful of their time. Not everyone is actually ready to be mentored. Right? What makes you ready to be mentored? If you're not ready to have someone give you feedback and your response is, thank you, period. You're not ready. And you know who I'm talking about. These are the people who you give feedback to, and then they spend 20 minutes giving you the why.
We call them assholes, yes.
Right? So if somebody takes the time to give you advice or to train you, say thank you, period. And if you don't understand what they said, you can say, can you give me an example of when I exhibited that behavior so I could better understand, that's okay. But if someone doesn't ask you, why did you do that? Don't tell them. They either don't want to know or they might not have time to tell you. Guess what? The best mentors are busy.
Yeah.
Be respectful of their time.
That's so very true. I was just at another event around women in business in general. It wasn't very specific to technology, although it was a technology-based company. And I thought it was very interesting is how many times as mentors of a certain age where someone walks up to you and says, I want you to mentor me, but provide zero follow-up, as in, why are you coming up to me? What value add are you looking for? Where the relationship could be, let's be honest, mentorship relationships are not necessarily reciprocal, but it is something where there needs to be some give and take as far as, like you say, acceptance of feedback, right? And I think that's where we fall short. It's hard to ask. I think from a mentee perspective, finding that right mentor, don't just walk up to anybody and say, hey, I want you to be my mentor, when that person knows nothing about you. I think there has to be a personal relationship for that connection. Would you agree or disagree with that? Or
no, I would completely agree in the following. And that's why I said formal, informal mentorship. We like to talk about mentorship programs now, right? But what's the best advice or training that you can receive from somebody? See you in action.
Yeah.
Yeah.
right? You could ask me, hey, will you be my mentor? And we can have pleasant conversations. You can tell me about your day. I can give you some, ask you questions, give you some ideas. But if you really want to improve your ability to provide measurable results for your business, somebody's got to see you in action.
100% right? Agree. Yeah.
So I'm actually an advocate for take on an attitude of being receptive to advice. And everybody could be your mentor, right? So when you, and so I've, you know, because I talk with women a lot and men in mentoring them, but not officially, right? Because I believe in continuous improvement. But I have three things that I tell them. And it's an approach and process. Number one, if somebody takes their time to give you feedback, say thank you, period. And don't justify, because that's defensive, right?
That's true. Yeah.
And you, it's it, that's not mentoring. That's almost like extortion, because you just stole my time. Right?
Yeah. No, that's great.
So number one, if somebody gives you feedback, say thank you, period. Number two, don't worry about how the feedback was given. Because people may not be telling you things in the way you want to hear them or are prepared to hear them. Don't shoot the messenger. If somebody's willing to take their time to give you feedback, say thank you, and don't be fussy about that they weren't too polite or weren't polite enough or didn't say may I or whatever, right?
Didn't sugarcoat it.
Yep, didn't sugarcoat it. You might not have been ready to hear it, but, you know, again, thank you. Don't shoot the messenger. And then the third is reflect upon the feedback you got. And not all feedback is the same. Do you respect the person? Just because somebody gave you feedback, if you don't respect them, then don't sweat it. If you do respect them, then you still have to reflect on what their intent was when they gave you that feedback, right? Because guess what? It's not always about you. Sometimes it's about them. And if you got in the way of their attempt to be king of something, you might just be collateral damage receiving that feedback. And that's also very good feedback, because who wants to get in the way of somebody's stardom approach, right? Being aware that they are in your, maybe not your immediate circle, but in the one or two circles away, and that what you're doing is impacting what they're doing, that's valuable. So take feedback in the context, right?
Right. Can I want to go into leadership too on this. And when you talk about mentorship, leadership, we're just going to go like some cool hashtags here. But, you know, for me, I remember an aha moment was really learning leadership wasn't permission based. And what I mean by that, it wasn't anyone asking you to be a leader necessarily. It was you saying, I'm going to lead this. So you had circumstances in your career where somebody said, hey, I think you should, I'm going to put you in this position, and you took that on. I'm going to assume, too, there were times in your career where you paved your own path, where you said, you know what, this needs to be done. I'm going to be the leader that takes control and does this.
Every job.
Okay.
So every job. And what? Why do I, I'm in, sorry to interrupt
you.
No.
I just want to
have
you elaborate.
But it's every job.
Too.
Every job. And I don't care if this is man or woman. When you're put into a job, when you're lucky enough to get a job, it is always your responsibility to do just what we talked about. Leadership is the art of motivating somebody, a group of people, to achieve a goal. What job have you ever had where that is not the deal? If you found one of those, please let me know. I'd like to just collect a paycheck. Right?
Right?
Every one of them, right? So it's the art of motivating. Right? And that's like so important.
So did you go in right away and start, like, you would be on a team or you'd see a situation and you're like, it's my job to motivate these people. It's my job to do this. Or was that a decision, something you learned later on?
It was a necessity of being a woman in technology in 86.
I'm impressed that you like saw that and realized and executed at that early of a stage in your career.
So 86 versus 2019, do you see any differences?
Oh, I see a lot of differences, and some of them are worrying, actually. Right? You know, the nice thing about being a woman in technology leadership in the 80s, because any woman that went into engineering in the 80s was a leader.
Very true.
Okay? So don't think the age had anything to do with it. To even go through engineering school and go into a workforce where you're the second female, the other lady started a week before me in 400 engineers. Every woman in engineering in the 80s was a leader. So, I mean, you know, it is what it is. And so it was a necessity, right? Isn't necessity the mother of invention? I had no other choice. It was be that way or drop out and go do something else.
So what does that mean, 86 versus 2019?
So now, 2019, we're in a society, and I kind of blame society a little bit.
It's okay, we all do.
Yeah, I'm joining. Okay, so my children grew up in a society that felt everyone should get a trophy for showing up. Right?
I have a theory on that, but keep going.
Yeah. Everyone got a trophy for showing up. What did they teach you? Right? What did that teach them?
You just got to show up.
Right? Effort doesn't matter. Yeah. You know, all this kind of thing, right? What happened to that? If you want to succeed, you actually have to work at it. Right? So now we have a whole generation that grew up with you don't have to earn anything. And now we wonder why people talk about the millennials. Society made them that way.
I have a tendency.
I like to throw out controversial things, you know.
No, that's cool.
And I love to make fun of the millennials as well. But and half this audience is like about to throw their wine at me, so it's okay. But could it not be argued? Okay, I have a couple things here about millennials. The comment about it is this. Millennials were raised by their parents who are of the baby boomer generation. So could it not be argued boomers or after boomers?
Yeah, I'm not a baby boomer.
But they're not older Gen Xs.
No,
if you think about this, right? Isn't it their own fault that they raised, you know, the awards for whatever, that generation, if you will? Now, that being said, that's one point. Second point is this. Those millennials that we're making fun of, the oldest, if you will, the highest range is now 38 years old. I would not hardly call them, you know, not as ambitious or winning that right. They are now the leadership roles. They are now in a position to run future businesses, projects, whatever it might be, whatever industry it is. They are now in that leadership position that we are now seeing. So is it a good or a bad thing? Couldn't we argue, say there's more women now pushing to being those leadership roles? Again,
well,
millennials.
And to the point, too, like, they never had the necessity that you ever had. You know what I mean? Like, it was kind of handed. A lot of stuff, I feel like, there's millennials. But a lot of stuff was handed to them, right? So do you see that from a leadership, you know, to see his question of the 2019 versus when 1986, do you see a complete, how is it, you said it was different, but is it, and you said it was almost worse. So how exactly is that because of that handing it to them? Can they not lead? Are they not forced to lead? Are they not seeing this necessity and therefore it's not as urgent to them?
Boy, a lot of things you guys say.
I know.
So
I have another one too.
I'm going to pick and choose the ones I want to answer.
No, go for it. I'm trying to figure out the right question.
For parents, you know, like, yeah, I do. I'm a baby boomer and I want to blame our generation. Like I said, this trophy things, but also giving your kids everything, right? I consciously, my husband and I, we consciously took decisions that we wanted our children to go into STEM programs, but we actually didn't force them, right? We consciously we made decisions. I'm going to pay for your college all out, but I'm not going to get you a car. That's on you. That's on you, right? And what did that mean? That meant they had to struggle for something. Every teenager wanted a car, right? So they had to struggle for something, and they had to work for something that was important to them. And that taught them a lot of things, right? And do you know how many times I heard, life is not fair? Right? But life is not fair. It's how you deal with life that makes up who you are. That makes up. My children will tell you that they heard things like, you know, but how you deal with that. Negativity is not your friend. Two wrongs don't make a right. Right? So if somebody wrongs you, it's not always about you. Like I said, sometimes it's, you're just collateral damage because you got in the way of them wanting to be a king. Right? But so you might be wronged for different reasons. Let it go. Let it go. If you choose to harbor negativity inside of you, it adds up and it builds. And it makes you the person you might not want to be. So, you know, you have to kind of think about these things when you're raising children or when you're approaching your own life. Life is not fair. It's how you deal with it that makes up who you are. Own your own destiny. Own it.
So going on the lines with the whole millennial, and we're not bashing millennials. We're just
I'm not a millennial basher. I have four children. I love them.
We're just simply indicating that you guys are of that age group. The ones that are throwing daggers at me. I'm just saying. But couldn't it not be argued then that as this generation is maturing, maybe perhaps leadership and the way leadership is being applied will evolve as they themselves are driving society. So could I just, on behalf of the millennials, say your advice is wonderful and it's great and it's legitimate and it's absolutely proven in time, but could there be potential for an evolution of leadership that we haven't considered before?
Well, I'll go back to, you know, I said the leadership is the art of motivating a group of people to achieve a goal. It's an art, okay? So what does art mean? That means it's not like prescriptive, right? That means it will evolve. That means it should evolve because it's an art. So the way that millennials approach leadership is likely different than the way I approach it. Because why? It's an art. My background, my experience, my values, they're all different than yours and yours and yours. So it's an art. So if you want to be a leader, you need to own it.
Whatever it might be is what you're saying.
That's right. Own your own destiny. And, you know, you've got to decide, how do I motivate people towards my cause?
So let's talk about motivating people to causes and whatnot. And I'm trying to be positive. Despite popular opinion, I can be positive at times, okay? Tim, I see your face. Just back off. Good thing you don't have a mic in your hand. How many times have you heard, maybe not the exact quote, but the sentiment, which is, Dr. Brenda Connor, you're a very smart individual, but stay in your lane. Have you heard this in the course of your career, and how did you overcome that? And I'm not talking about attitude and resilience. I get that, but did you have to get help by changing lanes or creating new lanes? What did you do?
Or did you just, I'm going to guess you did not stay in your lane all this time.
Actually, I was trying to think of a time when anybody ever said to me, in my face, not behind my back or something, but to my face, stay in your lane, in those words. You know, because, you know, I've been the head of Smart City and Intelligent Transport System, and I probably would have loved that. Stay in my lane. Cool transportation terminology. Oh, but the
AI is working. Okay, yeah, that's what we're talking about.
Yeah, yeah. So, but, you know, the sentiment, absolutely. It's not... It's not, does it happen? It's, well, how many times do I count the ways, right? So, but what I really learned from that, when people tell you to stay in your lane, metaphorically, is that you've got to be objective and not emotional in your response.
I'm out. I'm sorry. Yes, I'm paying attention. Yes, that's...
Right? So...
That makes sense.
So if your retort is to come back with a facts-based approach that takes the company strategy, the customer's needs, the value towards that, and you make it objective discussion, not a you were bad, I'm going to be bad, and we're going to go out in the parking lot and duke it out, right? But if you can stay factual and not emotional about it, then you get the best response. That's what I've seen. And I mean, I'm pretty good at that, is that, you know, when folks are kind of like territorial like that, when they shouldn't be, is how do you turn that around and make it not about them or not about you? It's about achieving the result that's needed for us to be successful as a business, or successful as a family, or successful as a team sport, right? You got to keep your eye on the ball, and that ball is the same metaphorically, whether you're playing a sport, whether you're talking about business, or whether you're talking about life.
So I want to cover, because we've talked a lot about the amazing things you've done, like, not to say you're not amazing, but what, any mistakes that stand out in your career, any moves you made that maybe, I hate to use regret because we're not supposed to have regrets, but anything that you stand out that looking back on, maybe wish you didn't, or, you know, change the course of something you wish it wouldn't have?
You know, the interesting thing about regrets is that you regret the things you don't do, not the things you do. So I separate regrets from mistakes, because if you make a mistake and you learn something from it, there's nothing to regret. Okay. So I've made a lot of mistakes. Just ask my children. They'll tell you all about them. But regrets I don't have. Yeah. Regrets I don't have. Because, you know, I've really had a blessed life. I mean, I have it all. I'm the American dream, right? I came from a very poor family, and now I'm not poor.
Right. The opposite of poor.
Right?
Thank you,
I won't
you,
say
Erickson.
I'm rich, but I'm not poor.
Right.
Again,
right?
Thank you, Erickson.
Thank you, Erickson. Yeah. And I have four wonderful children that are all successful. Right? So, you know, I really have it all. And I have a wonderful husband. By the way, fun fact about Brenda, who, if you like this, you're going to know, but I've actually known my husband since I was 4 years old. Who does that? Who knows that?
Right. So, any regrets on the, like, I know you said you have no regrets.
I don't have any regrets.
Any table or anything on the table, anything that you ever left that you look back, you're like, probably should have taken that opportunity. It sounds like you went with every opportunity that was handed to you.
You know, the only, if I want to call something a regret, and I really can't, is that I failed to recognize early enough on in my career that how you look and your health and fitness are a part of your job, not an extra, right? So how many people have not eaten right, not gotten enough exercise, and not gotten enough sleep, right? And then all of a sudden, some years later, you're carrying 30 extra pounds and, you know, you don't feel good, right? But let's be honest. To be successful, you need to say to yourself, taking that walk is a part of my being presentable in business. Right, so that's the only thing I regret, that I kind of didn't understand that until I got to be 50.
Hey, better late than never. Can I ask one? I'm going to ask one more selfish question, strictly for me. And I'm sure there's a few other mothers out there. Four kids, successful career, work-life balance. Is it a myth? Did you figure it out? Were there days where you were like, I don't know if I can survive? I'm just so curious how you did it, because it's an accomplishment.
It's just a fun question. So I probably look at things different than some people. I hear this work-life balance. There's no such thing as work-life balance. There's just life. There's just life. So, you know, be honest about what you really got. Right. And so, but that gets back to everything you do is really a team sport. How many people actually think they're successful because of me, myself, and I? Anybody? It's a team sport. So having the right team at work, the right team at home, the right team in your friends and family plan, I mean, it's really important. Right. So I was blessed to have an excellent spouse. I already mentioned him. I've known him since I was four. When we got pregnant for the first child, we had a decision to make. How are we going to deal with that? So my husband, the brave soul that he is, again, this is the 80s, took a decision to stay home with the children.
That's really unusual.
Yeah, you guys were super progressive.
Yeah, we were just like, I was the engineer, and then he stayed home with the children. And that was the hardest job any man has ever done, right? But think about what that meant, right? He was very active. My children were very active. But whenever they did sports and things, my husband would run that men's locker room, right, for all those mothers who couldn't go in there. And the mothers would take care of my girls in the locker room. Imagine what that meant,
wow.
Right? Who doesn't worry about creepers in the men's locker room when your son is in there and you can't go in, right? So, but we went Robert Frost, the path less traveled, and it made all the difference. That's what we did.
Yeah.
We were brave enough to, as a team, as a unit, do what we felt was best for our family. You can't have it all. You have to take choices.
Yeah. No, I appreciate that because it's very true. And the people that claim you don't have to are total BS. I think, anyway.
So Dr. Brenda Connor, I would like to first off say thank you very much for your time and your candidness with us. It takes a lot to admit certain things about maybe certain years specifically of your experiences, but one thing I'm taking away from you is you are no BS. You are definitely straightforward. You have said it in many different ways. Understand the vision of your organization that you're with, understand the value, and understand the customers' goals, needs, wants, etc., in a way that you can rise up. Whatever your role might be, it sounds like it doesn't matter if you're, quote, manager role, whatever it is, you could actually rise to attain a certain level of leadership in that particular space and time with your peer group and above. It sounds like to me it also resonates how you've been successful in your career because you've been able to navigate the bigger picture, the customers' wants, needs, plus your current position in the team, the community. May I ask you then, as we are trying to wrap up before Q&A, because I see certain individuals either itching for another glass of wine or they have questions to ask of you, but one final thought about the whole idea of women in tech leadership. Aaron and I argued over even titling it, and we finally just said, screw it, just go with what it is, women in tech leadership. There's no fancy words, but do you have some wisdom for us? Because we do have a broad group of individuals here. We have some tenured, experienced individuals, and we have some that are just starting on their career who just moved from Ohio, for example.
We have some millennials. No, just kidding.
Too soon? So any words of wisdom for this broad group? Just one last final parting thought.
A final thought. I don't think I ever have a final thought, but let me just...
I realized my mistake when I said it. I apologize.
We talked a lot about technical leadership, and that applies to whether you're a man or a woman. So if I kind of abstract out the one thing for women that women should take away from a discussion on women in any role, is that I believe that women hold themselves back. Own your own destiny. Women hold themselves back. Own your own destiny. That's really important to understand.
I'm clipping that and going to use that just as its own piece right there because it's huge.
Yeah, I actually muted myself as well. I turned it off. Aaron would have been proud of me. I forget to mute my own mic more often than not. So we're going to edit this, but
yeah,
I'm going to do a formal thank you and then we're going to Q&A. Is that cool?
Yeah,
cool, if you guys are cool with that. All right, so why don't you close it?
All right, well, Dr. Connor, thank you so much. If somebody wanted to find out more about you, anywhere you want to send them to, or more about, obviously Ericsson's a pretty broad, anywhere that we can send them to learn more about you or your company, or your call. You don't have to put anything out there.
More about me or my company.
Yeah.
Well, You can always go to www.ericsson.com to find out more about Ericsson, because they're a wonderful company. And I really mean it when I...
We've got some Ericsson in the house.
And I really mean it when I say that Ericsson's legacy is innovations with impact. I mean, I really believe that, right? They're a great company. If you want to learn more about me, I have a LinkedIn page.
Okay.
And I do wish I won't call it a regret, but I wish I was looked at it a little more frequently. But if you're a technical person and you're looking at that computer all day, who wants to leave work and go look at the computer again?
Yeah.
I mean, I'd like to go outside and do anything.